Hey everyone, welcome to Brain Health with Dr. Nissen. In this show, we explore the universe's great unknown, the human brain. In my reflections and interviews with guests, we'll go to the forefront of psychiatry, neuroscience, nutrition, and medicine to see how we can enhance our mental health, sharpen our cognition, and reach better performance. This is Brain Health, and I'm Dr. Nissen. Let's dive right in. Welcome to the show. In this episode, you'll learn about the relationship between the brain and the body in the creation of chronic pain. And we will also touch a bit upon some of the different treatments that may be out there that may be a bit surprising about what can be effective for the treatment of chronic pain. Today, I'm here with Dr. David Hanscom. He's a board-certified orthopedic surgeon specializing in the surgical correction of complex spine problems in the cervical, thoracic, and lumbar spine. He has expertise in adult and pediatric spinal deformities such as scoliosis and kyphosis. And a significant part of his practice was devoted to performing surgeries on patients who had undergone multiple prior spine surgeries, but he quit his surgical practice in 2019 to bring the known solutions for chronic pain into public awareness. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Dr. Hanscom.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be on. I guess I'd like to leave your audience with a couple basic messages, and we'll try to fill in the gaps in between. But the first message is that chronic pain is a solvable problem. We have all the technology and knowledge and resources now to solve it. And we keep spending billions of dollars of research trying to figure out a solution for chronic pain, and we actually already know the solution. Second thing is that the solution lies in feeling safe, which is not a psychological term, but it implies that your body chemistry changes from a stress profile to a play profile of oxytocin and dopamine. When you feel safe and your biochemical profile changes, your contentment goes up. But what happens, it changes your body physically. So nerve conduction slows, the blood supply to your stomach and bladder improve. And so you actually have real physical changes when you feel safe. So the principles behind the solution is learning how to regulate your body's chemistry in order to optimize the profile from a stress profile to a safe profile. The other thing I like to talk about is that most patients feel very labeled by their physicians, and most doctors don't know how to treat chronic pain. They don't enjoy it. That would include myself historically. It's my own journey through chronic pain that I evolved the process that came out. But basically, when you put together a structured program with known proven medical treatments, people actually solve their own problem. This is not a hard process to do. But the reason why you're asking, well, why is a spine surgeon talking about chronic pain? It turns out that the mental pain is a much bigger problem than the physical pain. It turns out that much of the spine surgery I was doing was on anxiety. And of course, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. There's not one research paper that documents that spine surgery works for back pain, not one in 60 years. Mm-hmm. Yet it's upwards of a $10 to $15 billion a year industry operating with about a 20% success rate. So those are some of the basic core concepts. But I think the main one is understanding that the mental pain is a bigger problem, that this word we call anxiety is actually a physiological problem, not psychological. And that's what I'd love to sort of talk about today.
Great. And sort of to transition into that, you touched on a little bit, but you know, making your transition from being a surgeon to looking at this from sort of an anxiety perspective and from a mental health perspective, how did that transition sort of happen for you?
Well, you know, I was what they call a gunner in medical school. I was, you know, top fourth in my class. I worked hard. I got into a good residency in internal medicine. I get into a nice orthopedic program in Hawaii. Then I went to one of the top spine fellowships in the country at the time in Minneapolis. And I came out of there on fire. I mean, I was a surgeon. I was determined to do surgery. I felt surgery was a definitive answer for pain in general. I had no idea that chronic pain was actually a neurological problem, not a structural one. So when I started in Seattle, we were doing 9 times the rate of spine fusions for back pain as any place else in the entire country. Mm-hmm. And I was part of that. Then in 1993, a paper came out of Washington showing that the success rate of a back fusion for back pain was about 25%. And I just stopped. I go, well, this isn't really working. My patients weren't doing that well. And the data was really condemning about doing the operation. So I just stopped. But meanwhile, I began my own descent into chronic pain. And how that happened in 1990, I was driving back from a meeting in Bellevue about 10 o'clock at night. I was driving across the 520 bridge and coming down the ramp into the bridge, and my heart started to race. I started to sweat. I felt very short of breath, and I felt like I was going to pass out. And of course, I was 37 years old at the time and thought I was having a heart attack. It turned out to be a panic attack. And literally in 5 minutes, I went from being a fearless herd and honestly not really connected with anxiety at all. I was a master at suppressing it, to panic attacks. And once that panic attack started, I couldn't put it back in the back. I mean, I had endless panic attacks. I started developing crippling anxiety. And then by 1997, it had morphed into a full-blown obsessive compulsive disorder, which is a nightmare beyond words. And so I was totally gone. So I never could figure out, wait a second. So I've gone to counseling before. I've always been open to it. I'm a responsible person. Mm-hmm. And I went from being highly successful, and I still was able to do my surgical practice during this period of time, which in retrospect, I don't know how I pulled that one off. But I am tough, which is actually one of the problems, by the way. But it never made sense to me. So I actually went into psychotherapy for 13 solid years after that, trying to solve this anxiety thing. Turns out that anxiety is simply a physiological response to the environment that says danger. And what had happened is that, and as I went through the psychotherapy, my anxiety got way worse. And again, it progressed from nervousness, anxiety, sweating, panic attacks. And by 1997, it hit this full-blown obsessive compulsive disorder, which is the ultimate anxiety disorder, because you get almost visual input about things causing anxiety, and you really can't control it. So as a surgeon, you have lots of control issues, but when you have these bodily reactions like this, you can't control them. So as I kept going to psychotherapy, kept working on it, kept getting worse, but I never could figure out how he go from being a fearless surgeon to crippling anxiety literally in 10 minutes. And then from that point on, it was a disaster. Turns out that anxiety is a signal that just says danger. When something threatens you, while your body secretes the autonomic nervous system, secretes stress chemicals, the blood supply to your gut goes down, the blood supply to your brain goes down, and you just go into survival mode. So it's a total body physiological reaction to a threat. That is not psychological. So that's a physiological state. And it turned out that the unconscious brain processes somewhere between 10 to 20 million bits of information per second. The conscious brain only processes 40. So if you try to solve this massive survival response with conscious means, it's not going to work. On top of that is that the more you try to put your attention on the survival response, you actually reinforce it. Then what I finally figured out, again, through horrible experience, is that your mental pain, your mental threats, the research shows, go to the same part of the brain as a physical threat. We know that emotional pain and unpleasant thoughts are processed in the same region of the brain as a physical threat. So what happens, a chemical response is the same, but humans have a problem that you can't escape your thoughts. You can suffer with them, you can mask them, which I was quite good at doing, or you can mask them with some type of addiction, but you can't escape your thoughts. So I call it the curse of consciousness. So then you're trying to use these rational means like talk therapy, et cetera, to solve anxiety. It turns out anxiety is just a sensation generated by elevated stress chemicals. So the rhetorical question I ask all the people that are listening to me is, okay, anxiety is an unconscious survival response. You can't control it. It's not subject to rational interventions. How do you decrease anxiety? And the people talk about mindfulness and meditation, which are methods, but the answer I'm looking for is simply decrease the stress chemicals. So the sensation of anxiety drops down. And then what happens is a bunch of ways of doing that. As you decrease the stress chemicals, the sensation of anxiety drops, and then you start moving on. And if you get rid of anxiety, you wouldn't survive more than 10 or 15 minutes or even less, because you wouldn't breathe, you wouldn't eat, you wouldn't avoid oncoming cars. So anxiety is actually necessary for us to survive. It's how we evolved. Avoided danger, gravitated towards reward. So you can't get rid of anxiety. You don't want to get rid of anxiety. So once you understand its place in your life, then it's game on.
Okay. Yeah, that was something that I was kind of reflecting upon and thinking about recently with this with the coronavirus epidemic going on, and that, you know, it seemed like a lot of people, you know, had worsening anxiety, and nevertheless, it was pretty resistant to interventions because people know subconsciously that they are at some sort of risk or threat. And so there's an enormous amount of resistance to freeing yourself from that anxiety, because we all subconsciously know we need it. It's protective.
Right. Well, and see, the key, and this is the key to the solution, by the way, is that you can't get rid of it. You don't want to accept it because actually it's intended to be so unpleasant that it causes you to take survival action. So it's always going to be an unpleasant survival reaction. So there's three parts to solving it. One of them is to simply separate the reaction from who you are. In other words, if your identity gets mixed up in this massive survival response, you're in trouble. The first thing I say is, look, just get rid of the word anxiety out of your vocabulary. And if you're agitated or upset, just say my stress chemicals are elevated. Visualize a large thermometer on the opposite wall that just reflects the levels of your stress chemicals. And then instead of saying I'm anxious, to say, okay, I'm going to drop my stress chemicals down. So what you've done is separated your identity from the reaction. And it's just an empiric, sociopathic, amoral survival response that has nothing to do with who you are as a person. So you have this massive, again, 20 million to 40 ratio. So you have this massive survival response. So it's what you have, it's not who you are. Who you are is this conscious brain, which is over here trying to thrive and be creative and engage with life. So once you, if you get your identity mixed up with a survival response, then you're trapped. I wrote a website post called Anxiety Prison Guard Bodyguard. So it's definitely your bodyguard to keep you alive. But if your identity gets mixed up with this survival reaction, then it becomes your prison guard. Again, the key issue here is understand that it's a physiological response. It says danger is necessary. Then what happens is the antidote to anxiety is control. You control the situation. And stress chemicals drop, you feel less anxious. But the stress that's the most stressful is the stress that you can't control. And so we're talking about stress management, but guess what? You can't manage the coronavirus. You can't manage this pandemic. Can't solve it. It's not solvable. You can't manage the stresses of being a physician in training unless you decide to come out of training. So there's most things in your life that are truly stressful are not controllable. The antidote to anxiety is control. When you lose control, your body kicks in more stress chemicals, the adrenaline, cortisol, histamine, cytokines, endorphins, extra stress response. Your body kicks in this massive chemical response even higher in an effort to regain control, and you become angry. Turns out that anger and anxiety are the same entity, with anger being really high stress chemicals. The problem in chronic pain is that you're trapped. When you're trapped by anything, especially pain, Dr. Sarno, who's one of my mentors, described it as rage. And then what happens when you're fully stressed chemicals that are sustained, remember you can't escape your thoughts. When you're fully stressed chemicals, then you start getting sick. And we know that chronic stress causes autoimmune disorders, rheumatoid arthritis, asthma. It shortens lifespan by about 7 years. There's double the heart disease, hypertension, et cetera, suicide, obesity. All those things go up with sustained stress. But again, it's why would you develop an autoimmune disorder? Because it's, quote, psychological. It's not the psychology of it. It's the body's chemistry changes. And so what happens under sustained stress, your immune system goes crazy, becomes very compromised, out of balance, and you attack yourself. So again, the anxiety system is simply a description of the sensation generated by elevated stress chemicals. Just like if you're lying on the beach in the sun, you're full of oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin, and the GABA drugs and growth hormone. You feel relaxed. Relaxed isn't a diagnosis, just like anxiety is not a diagnosis. They're both descriptions of your body's chemical state. So again, going back to one of the main points I made at the beginning, that the essence of solving chronic pain, again, mental pain is a much bigger problem, is feeling safe. And we learn to regulate your body's chemistry, which we'll discuss in a second, then you now have control and you can now allow yourself to feel safe. So as you feel safe, you optimize your body's chemistry, and then all these physical symptoms disappear. Turned out chronic pain is solvable by learning to auto-regulate your body's chemistry. I had 17 of these physical symptoms at the same time. So I had ringing in my ears, migraine headaches, burning in my feet, skin rashes would pop up all over my body. The list just went on and on and on. So they're gone. Within 6 months after I really broke through this thing, somewhat by accident in retrospect, I'm fine. My OCD is gone. Anxiety is minimal. All these physical symptoms are gone. I sleep better. My depression's gone. My feet don't burn. My ears don't ring. I mean, I had ringing in my ears for 25 years. Wow. It is the most annoying symptom you can imagine. Mm-hmm. I went to ENT, had all sorts of ear testing. They talk about white noise, different ways to distract yourself. It's a nightmare symptom. Mm. So it's gone. I never in my lifetime thought this tinnitus would be gone. It's gone. Mm. So same thing with my migraine headaches. I think I've had one migraine in 10 years. And so I used to have them every 2 to 3 weeks that were extreme migraines. They weren't subtle. I had these skin rashes would pop up on both my wrist and my elbows. Mm-hmm. Happened 4, 5, 6 times a day. And I was, quote, it was urticaria. And of course, nothing really worked. Those are gone. Mm-hmm. My scalp used to itch. That's gone. So again, the deal is that's not psychological. Those physical, remember, each organ system is going to respond in its unique way. Mm-hmm. So that's why so many different physical symptoms, because each organ is different, right?
Yeah.
So I never expected any of this. I didn't know why I got into the problem. Didn't know why I came out of it. But going back to the original problem, how could you go from being a fearless surgeon to anxiety in 10 minutes? Is I was a master at suppressing it. Mm. And you can't escape your thoughts. The research shows when you suppress your thoughts, they become not only stronger, they become a lot stronger. There's a 1987 paper out of Harvard, written by Dr. Daniel Wegner, called The Paradoxical Effects of Thought Suppression. Mm-hmm. And we all know when you try not to think about something, you think about it more. But he also demonstrated there's a huge trampoline effect that you think about it a lot more. So I was such a master suppressing anxiety, I didn't even know I had it. I mean, mm-hmm. I think from a psychiatric world, you would call it dissociated. Mm-hmm. So even though I didn't feel anxiety, I had something like 15 physical symptoms, but I didn't put these two together. Never put that correlation together.
Right.
So it turns out it wasn't a psychological issue that got me in trouble, is that my body's physiology exploded. And when it exploded, it's like the top coming off a pressure cooker. It was unbelievable. Mm.
And I know you write a lot about expressive writing. Is that sort of through that lens of thought suppression, that it's sort of a way to liberate yourself from this thought suppression and get thoughts out so that they're no longer sort of ironically obsessive?
Yeah, it's fascinating research because first of all, I ran across it by accident in the book Feeling Good by David Burns, is how I actually pulled out of this. And you may have heard me thank David Burns personally multiple times, but it was about 2002. I happened to pick up his book again called Feeling Good. And as you know, David Burns says to start writing. So I started to write. Mm-hmm. I was using the 3-column technique of you write down the negative thought, categorize it, then write down the more appropriate thought. And within 2 weeks after I started writing, things started to shift. And I go, huh. I mean, honestly, it's the first time in 15 years I felt a little bit of a shift. Mm-hmm. By 6 weeks, I was probably 70% better as far as the anxiety part of it. And about 6 months later, I somewhat awkwardly developed, I went through my anger issues, which I actually was disconnected from those also. I actually thought I was pretty cool. And when I got through that in about a horrible 6 weeks, within 6 weeks after that, my symptoms disappeared. Hmm. But I didn't know the connection between anxiety and anger. And I originally thought it was a Feeling Good book that solved my problems. It turned out it's a great book, but actually the writing exercises are critical. Mm-hmm. And what we found out in the process that we present on my website and book is this called expressive writing, is that the research started in the 1980s by Dr. Penny Baker and Dr. Wegner, by the way, and Dr. Joshua Smythe. You simply write down your thoughts, tear them up, and you can't solve your thoughts, but you're simply, to me, it's a separation exercise. Mm-hmm. So you either suffer, suppress, or mask your thoughts. So with the writing exercise, what you're doing, the thoughts are on the table. You're here. There's now a space separated by vision and feel. You can't control your thoughts, but you can separate from them. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just a metaphor for separating from your thoughts. The reason why my patients tear them up is to write with freedom. Most of the research is done with negative emotional expression, but it actually doesn't matter whether it's negative or positive. They're just thoughts. But the second reason, which I think is more important, is that if you start analyzing your thoughts, you're actually paying more attention to them. The solution to chronic pain is actually feeling safe. It's also based on neuroplasticity, where your brain's going to develop wherever you place its attention. Mm-hmm. And so if your attention's on the thoughts and the problems and all these, quote, issues, then that's where attention goes. Go back to the original conversation about mental pain being the bigger problem than physical pain, is that you can't escape your thoughts. We talked about anxiety being a physiological reaction, much more powerful than the conscious brain. But the first step is taking anxiety completely out of vocabulary and just stating my stress chemicals are elevated. That's it. Mm-hmm. Then there's two ways of and the way you decrease anxiety is simply decrease the stress chemicals. There's two ways of doing that. First one is just directly, where we know that mindfulness, meditation, relaxation tools work, right? Mm-hmm. Well, by understanding that anxiety is physiological, not psychological, you're not doing these exercises to sort of combat anxiety. You're doing the stress chemicals. The reason why they work, of course, is they simply decrease the stress chemicals. Mm-hmm. And exercise, visualization, all those things are direct ways on a given day of actually decreasing stress chemicals. So there's a tool I call active meditation, which I have a hard time meditating, which I think is a great tool. Mm-hmm. But right now, I just drop my shoulders for a second, take a deep breath, and just putting your brain on a different sensation for 3 to 5 seconds is the second strategy combined with expressive writing that allows you to place your attention on a different sensation and not the racing thoughts.
Okay.
We actually do this during surgery. If you get a little bit anxious or frustrated, you simply go to light touch of the instruments. And so instead of fighting these racing thoughts, which gets worse as you do the surgery, as you keep connecting to feel, the thoughts just disappear. So instead of fighting them, you're simply switching your attention to a different direction.
Right.
So I call it active meditation, which you know very well as mindfulness, which is a very abbreviated mindfulness. And the reason why I like it, because it's real time. Like right now, you upset me for some reason. I just drop my shoulders down and go, okay. So I don't have to get into this mental battle with the thoughts. I simply drop my shoulders down and switch sensations. Feel the back of your chair, listen to a sound. I do it all day long. I used to do it with my patients in clinic. And between the expressive writing and the active meditation, I mean, probably most people that started to do that within 2 weeks had a significant shift, 20-30%, 50%. I mean, just they would notice a shift. I was always clear that the expressive writing is not the solution. It's just the starting point. Remember, the mechanism to solve chronic pain is to feel safe and optimize your body's chemistry. The direct methods we just talked about drop your chemistry down for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, maybe longer. But the more important way of actually dealing with body chemistry is to dampen the response by stimulating neuroplasticity. Instead of being stress automatic survival response, which your body's programmed to do, give a choice of response. And that's what, as you know, cognitive behavioral therapy does. You create awareness of the negative thought, you categorize it and redirect. So it's awareness separation reprogramming is how you stimulate neuroplasticity. So that's where what the expressive writing also does is the awareness and separation of one move, the active meditation redirects your attention. And so we do know in chronic pain that the brain physically shrinks, decreases in size. As you treat chronic pain, it actually physically re-expands. So the tools aren't just psychological, they're actually physiological. You're actually changing the structure of your brain. What you're doing, you're dampening the response that maybe there's not a response at all, or maybe the response is short-lived. And so, again, it's awareness, separation, reprogramming, with the first step being awareness. In other words, you have to allow yourself to feel anxious, not suppress it. You have to allow yourself to feel angry, not suppress it. You're not going to get rid of it. So it's awareness, separation, reprogramming. And what happens, again, with training, your brain actually starts to physically change. And so the anxiety levels drop through the floor. And people can sort of tolerate physical pain, but they don't tolerate the mental pain. It just drives people insane.
And you talked a bit before about sort of the physiological piece being perhaps more important than the psychological piece, or being the only part that matters. But nevertheless, it seems like you are interested in the role that therapy can play in this. So could you kind of talk a little bit about whether or not you see, you know, psychological interventions like therapy being a part of this, and how it fits into this picture?
Right. No, absolutely. No, I'm a strong proponent of therapy. I think it's really critical to understand where it fits. So remember that end reaction is survival, right?
Right.
So if my cat is threatened, she's going to take a leap and her body's full of stress chemicals. She's going to survive. Once her problem's solved, the anxiety goes away. You can't escape your thoughts. So what you're doing with cognitive behavioral therapy, which is why it happened in retrospect to be so effective, is that I became aware of the thought that's creating the chemical reaction. Remember, the chemical reaction is the same with a mental threat than a physical threat. So what the cognitive behavioral therapy in the three column technique did was I create awareness of the thought, then the writing separated me from it, then you would write down the more appropriate thought. Mm. And so what you're doing, you're simulating neuroplasticity. So solutionalizing neuroplasticity, what I did for 13 years, and again, I think it was supportive. And if I combined it with the idea of redirecting my brain, it would have been incredibly powerful. But there's a tendency in psychotherapy that if you just understand the problem enough, you're going to solve it. Mm. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like knowledge is power. So, I mean, I can tell you to the minute almost about my childhood background, the abuse, everything that went on. But as I paid more attention to it, I was actually reinforcing the circuits. Mm. Again, the solution lies in neuroplasticity. So, as you know, there's cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. I think that the book concepts represent more of acceptance commitment therapy. Mm-hmm. There's another group of therapies called emotional expressive therapy, EAET. Mm-hmm. And so basically the bottom line is if you can't feel your emotions, in other words, you can't allow yourself to feel the emotions, it's going to be expressed physically. You'll develop mm-hmm. physical symptoms instead of allowing yourself to feel mental symptoms. So in essence, what you're training your brain to do is feel comfortable with anxiety and you're separating from it. So, okay, it's there. You get to watch it separate from it. Again, if your identity gets wrapped up in this anxiety reaction, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to analyze your life around this anxiety feeling and feeling guilty and ashamed, et cetera, it's an amoral, sociopathic survival response that's not going to get better. Mm-hmm. It is not. So what you're doing is you separate from that reaction and then allows the psychology to work on the creative part of your brain.
It seems like part of what you're saying here from the anxiety perspective and from the psychological perspective through therapy is that there is part of the, or a big large part of the value that you see in it is sort of the creation of the space between the thought and recognizing these symptoms of elevated stress hormones.
Right.
And then creating sort of and strengthening your own ability to focus your attention in certain areas. Right. And increase the neuroplasticity of focusing attention in right. certain areas.
And it's wonderful if I can take the foundational tools. So let's say you're in practice and say you've given people my book on the website and they're working on their own issues as far as medication management, maybe you're addressing state medications, working on exercise a little bit. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing as a psychiatrist or psychologist is that you're giving wisdom, guidance, support, which are all critical parts of moving forward. The vast majority of people that have gotten better on the book and website, I've never seen or even talked to. None of them have seen psychologists. They haven't gone to pain clinics. It's very self-directed. That being said, if I can get them to see a psychologist or psychiatrist, it is faster. It's more of a complex, rounded, wonderful process to add mm-hmm. those dimensions right from the beginning. The key issue, once you can let go of psychiatrist being the solution, by itself and put it in part of the bigger picture, it's pretty wonderful. The key issue here is called neuroplasticity. So the solution is not psychology. Chronic pain is not a psychological problem. It's a neurochemical response to a threat. Psychology does come into play as part of the treatment. But the key word is neuroplasticity of stimulating your brain to rewire around your old pain circuits. Because they are permanently embedded circuits. You can't change them. The more energy you try to spend fixing them, you're actually playing more attention on them and reinforcing them. Mm-hmm. So with neuroplasticity, it's awareness, separation, reprogramming. We talked about the expressive writing being awareness and separation in one move, and the active meditation, a reprogramming process. But the more complex way to go is looking at anger. And so forgiveness is an awareness you're angry, feeling it. Then forgiveness is a separation. Then a very, very powerful reprogramming tool is play. Mm. Because when you're at play, you're looking at optimized body chemistry. People feel much better for lots of obvious reasons. But it's just not the play. It's also the chemical response that becomes elicited in play. Mm. So I have a website, backincontrol.com, which outlines all these different phases. Very self-directed. The book is Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. And between the book and the website and looking to your local resources, chronic pain flat out is a solvable problem. It can be 3 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, a year, even 2 years. Nobody ever knows when people pop out of the pain pathways, but the pain really does go away. And it's been really a remarkably rewarding experience to watch people get better, including myself.
Awesome. Well, I will be sure to include that information in the show notes so that people can find you and your work. And then as we've discussed, we'll continue the conversation and we'll have another episode here coming soon. And we'll continue to talk specifically about the role of anger and play and how we can move that into the treatment of chronic pain. Hey listeners, some of you have so kindly asked how you can support the podcast. You can help by supporting us on Patreon, so please kindly find our Patreon link in the show notes. You can also support us by leaving a review, so please let me know what you think about the show by leaving a review on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook as Dr. Nissen. And it's important to note that this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. And the use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is content of this podcast and is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions.